Another episode of Records Revisited, a podcast dedicated to the magic of music. I'm your DJ MC, host on the East Coast. I'm Ben Montgomery. Joining me is a man who, he's a little bleary, worse for wear and tear. He's just a man with some faraway eyes. He always seems a little bit shattered. Here's my co-host from the left coast, Wayne Fugate.
Hola, Benjamin.
For this episode, we have a repeat revisitor. You probably remember him from our 2023 Most Listened to Songs episode from a couple months ago. And from a few years ago, our Frightened Rabbit episode. Please welcome back to the podcast from the Marinade Podcast, Jason Earle.
Gentlemen, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to do this, and I cannot wait to talk about one particular song.
Oh, I think I know which one, but yeah, we're going to have a good time talking about that one. How's life?
Life's good on my end.
Okay. Adjusting to being single.
Adjusting to being single, kind of finally getting used to it. I've had all these kind of wonderful things happen to me recently, where these wonderful folks have come into my life, and just feeling really grateful for the perspective that they're providing. And
did you move out?
Nah, man, I'm still roommates with my ex, as you do.
All right.
So I've got two and a half more weeks. She's out of town right now. Then yeah. I have a break, so I'm gonna be like at Swanee for a few days. So yeah. I'll be out of town taking in some music coming from the trees and so forth. And then she's out of town another week. So basically only have to be roommates like a week and a half, and then I get to move out. So counting down the days, man. I'm looking forward to it.
Okay. You just need to send me a text reminder. I'll help you move.
Dude, I really appreciate that, and I will take you up on it. Yeah.
I got a truck too, so.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, Wayne will come over. Awesome. Wayne will come over from Tampa, help us out.
Y'all are amazing.
So you have a place to stay.
I do. Yeah, I'm going to be moving not too far down the road in my beloved Milk District. In fact, off mic we're talking about how Jen Ross and I went to comedy show tonight, and Jen is going to rent her place to me. So, I'm super excited because it's like in my old neighborhood. It's a nice spot that I know near my friends and within walking distance of all my favorite spots. And I'm closer to work then. It'll be a 10-minute bike ride instead of a 20-minute bike ride to school every day to teach the chillins. So I'm excited.
But you know that's so cliche when you're like, I'm going to bike 10 minutes to school to be a teacher.
I know. Okay. This one woman I've been spending time with, who's just an incredible person, who's been giving me a lot of perspective on the world and like helping me see things differently. She's like, "You're like a Wes Anderson character or something." And I'm like, "That is the coolest thing anyone's ever said to me." Thank you.
And you're like, compliment or
yeah. Right.
Which Wes Anderson character? Yes.
Right.
Right. Yeah. True.
Any non-Bill Murray?
Yeah, I was going to say. I was just
okay. Yeah.
Bill Murray for Rushmore.
Yeah. I think we're fine there. All right. I haven't even done the t-shirt question. It's late and I'm tired. So Wayne, what t-shirt are you wearing?
Oh, last week I had a bunch of people in town. I took them down to Clearwater Beach. I bought a t-shirt while I was there.
Okay. Nice. Jason, what t-shirt
I've got
are
my
wearing?
James McMurtry Canola Fields t-shirt. Patrick Hagerman and I went to see James McMurtry about 3 weeks ago now. Yeah. Incredible show. It's my third time getting to see the legend of James McMurtry, and he never disappoints.
Awesome. I'm wearing my Marvelous 3 t-shirt for the umpteenth time, but
nice.
Yeah. Wayne, you should be wearing a Carbon Leaf t-shirt, though, right now.
Apparently, they're more popular than I realized.
So, all right. So, let me just set the stage here. So, Carbon Leaf did their annual Florida run. I got to see the boys up here in Orlando. I wasn't sure if Wayne was completely committed to going to the show at Skipper's there in Tampa. So I got Jesse, the drummer, who's been on the podcast a couple times. And we FaceTime Wayne, and Wayne was already in bed at like 10:15. Which
you guys kept saying that. I was on the
line. Well, it was dark. Okay, all right. And we're like, you're coming to the show on Saturday, and you're like, yes, and I'm bringing like six of my friends. And so I texted him Saturday night. I was like, so you at the Carbon Leaf show? He's like, what did you say?
Sold out.
Yeah, you just replied with sold out. I'm like, was that before or after you got tickets? And he's like,
well, that one says sold out if they got tickets.
Well, sure they could.
Well, you could, but it would be
you. That would be short for I'm at a sold out show. So you still haven't seen Carbon Leaf.
Why your voice is getting dumbass. Elevated like I've done something wrong.
Because I'm just irritated with you. I'm like,
I felt like I went on early in the internet morning
where you can buy tickets.
I went on early in the morning and the tickets were not available. There were no more tickets available.
Okay.
I'm sure what is Skipper's Smokehouse holds like 150 people.
200 people. I know 200 people or something like that. So it's small.
I thought I'd be okay. Lesson learned.
I do love Skipper's though. It's a great venue. Too.
Yeah. I was looking forward to it. I had all the people looking forward to it. Everybody was like, when are we going?
You've been to Skipper's, right?
Yeah, but not in years. And is it in a different location now? No. It's the same spot. Same okay. Place. Okay. So one of my all time favorites, one of my favorite podcast moments was one of the first episodes I recorded of the Marinade with Verlin Thompson. And we got locked into Skipper's. And so we talked so long and we were just lost in the conversation. And all of a sudden we get to the end of the taping. He had played with Donald the Buffalo. So this is like late night at this point.
Yeah.
And we look around and there's nobody around. And they had just locked us into Skipper's and we couldn't find a way to get out. So Verlin just takes his guitar. It's just him and his guitar. He just throws his guitar over his back and he's like, we'll get out of here. And he walks up and I swear to God, it's like 70-year-old Verlin Thompson just kicks the emergency exit open and we exit Skipper's with the alarms blaring and he just saunters into the parking lot and calmly gets into his car and drives off. It was so rock and roll. It was such like a wonderful, I could just picture like him and Guy Clark, you know, he played guitar for Guy Clark for like 25 years. Right. I could picture like all the moments, like for me, that was such a big rock star moment. And I'm just thinking, man, the number of times Verlin's probably done something cool like this, you know, with Guy Clark or in some random locale. It's just really, really fun. But I do love Skipper's. It's a great spot.
Yeah. All right. Well, Wayne, next time I'm just going to drag your ass to Orlando. I'll make sure that you get a ticket next time.
Yeah, if they just said, yeah, Jesse could have put me on the list. I'm not totally
or
to blame here.
You could have done that. I could have given you his phone number. Anyways, we still feel weird. Jason, let me hear your comments about this.
Okay.
I still feel weird about asking for tickets. I still feel weird about it. Like if they offer it, then I'll go, yeah, put us on the list. Great. That'd be great. I'd love to see you. But I just don't go out of my way to go, hey, so remember that episode that you were on with me? really loved.
Yeah.
I feel like a Gomer doing it.
Yeah, same. I mean, I think what I typically do is in that situation, if I know somebody that's been on the show or that I have some kind of relationship with is coming to town, I may send them a message just telling them I'm excited for them to come to town. If they then offer, cool. I don't push it past that typically.
Yeah.
If I'm covering the show in some way, like a lot of times my interviews are in person, right? So I'm usually catching up with somebody before the show in the green room or in their van or their bus or whatever. So
is that what I need to do?
I mean,
is that my way of getting on the list?
It'll get you on the list. Okay. It's a different experience though, because then you got your recording equipment and it's a whole different ball game. But
Wayne doesn't say anything during the interview portion anyway. So I'll just go out and do it myself.
Yeah, there you go.
Sorry, sorry, Wayne, you won't be on the list. I will be.
Oh, wow.
But you won't be. I don't know.
Hopefully you can be your plus one, but
yeah.
I'm so weird about it. Like, so I was my buddy. So my buddy is, was good friends with the guy who plays guitar for His Golden Messenger.
Yeah.
And so he was on the list the other day when they were at the social here in Orlando. And so I was his plus one. And so it's kind of like tonight, my schedule was pretty stacked, you know? So I was like, went to the Magic game and then I was trying to meet him there and go to the social. Well, I'm so bad at like finagling my way into things like that. I'm just like overly honest about the situation. So I like walk up to the bouncer. I'm there before my buddy who's got work to do. And I'm like, well, I'm Adam's plus one. And I'm like trying to explain the situation, but he's like, I can't let you in until Adam himself is here. Right. And like, then there's 100 ways I could have played that I probably could have gotten in, but I'm just too like, this is the situation and I have to be very upfront about the situation. And I'm just really bad at like getting into things like that. So I ended up missing half of the show because I'm just standing outside waiting for Adam to get done with work because I'm too damn honest.
Yeah. Right. You guys ready to talk about Rolling Stones?
Let's do it.
The reason why we're together.
Let's do it.
All right. Some Girls. So we've already talked about Exile. We already talked about Sticky Fingers. Those are the only two that we've talked about?
Yep.
We haven't done Beggars yet, right?
No.
What?
God, why, they got so many good records.
Why did you give me that?
No. Oh, that's my favorite Rolling Stones record. I was thinking of, because I remember you said this was Jason's, and I love this record. But it's funny. It's like once you have a favorite Rolling Stone record, I feel like you can't walk back from it. Like you're like, you know what? That's my favorite record. Regardless, I'm standing by it because you said Sticky Fingers.
I've said that for 40 years, and so I'm like you. I can't go back.
It's always reaffirmed when I listen to Banker's Banquet because I think Sympathy for the Devil and Street Fighting Man are two of their best songs. I love Social Commentary. Mick Jagger doesn't do it a lot, but when he does it, he knocks it out of the park. But what I love is Jigsaw Puzzle and No Expectations. I think like Salt of the Earth, I think those are the songs that make that my favorite record.
Okay. All right. I think I would discuss just about any Rolling Stones except for maybe her Satanic.
Yeah, Her Majesty's Satanic Request and Black and Blue. Those two.
Like I found it for like $2 at a thrift store and I was like, yes, old Rolling Stone album I don't have. And then I remembered why I don't have it. It's terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I know that since Some Girls, I think a lot of people have written off a lot of their albums, but every time I listen to one, I go, there's some good stuff on this. Like,
yeah.
So I bought the most recent record, Hackney Diamonds, and the first side, I just listened to the first side again, on vinyl today, and first side's killer.
Yeah, like I brought it up before. I think Bigger Bang is the one that sticks out to me.
Yeah,
I mean, what was it like 2005, 2007, something like that? And as far as a Rolling, I mean, it was one of the best records I heard that year. Like, it may not be one of the best Rolling Stone records, but man, these guys,
yeah,
they don't stop. And Steel Wheels was, you know, I mean, I would say Some Girls is the last great Rolling Stone record. I think that's,
I would agree.
Anybody that argues that is just not using logic, but Steel Wheels and Bridges to Babylon, Bigger Bang. Okay. Those are all really, really good records. They're just, when you compare them to the four records that, you know, when you Beggar's Banquet, Let It Bleed,
the five best songs on each of those albums, any songwriter would kill to have those.
Well, just this record, like the couple of the songs, I was like, they sound like any of a dozen or two dozen Rolling Stone songs that I've heard before. They're still better than most anything anybody else has ever written.
So Jason, why do you consider this your favorite Rolling Stones record, now that you know what Wayne and mine are?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's interesting as y'all were saying that, because I'm not going to argue against Beggar's Banquet. I wouldn't argue against like Exile, you know, for the best Stones record. This one's my favorite, I think. And as I listened to it, this is really fun to do this because I listened to it like six times, you know, in the last 24 hours, which is super fun because I was revisiting it and hadn't heard it in a while all the way through. But what I realized, and I posted that picture last night on Twitter of Keith Richards' life, right? And like, I've had this thing has made so many moves with me. You know, this book is so wonderful, and so many moves with me.
I think Wayne's copy is earmarked just like yours. Like, yeah. I wish people could see the video of this.
Because I will say,
Jason's got all sorts of sticky notes sticking out of his.
I read that book and learned how to play the guitar and taught myself. I mean, I'm not by any means a guitar player, I would say, but I read that book, and as much as it inspired me to play the guitar, like, there's something mercurial about him, and he makes you want to do things. But at the same time, because I was doing the notes for this and I read something about Beast of Burden, and it's a complete everything. Keith Richards is, according to Keith Richards, is responsible for everything. Like, every good idea was his idea.
Yeah.
Every bad idea, or every time they got sued, or maybe might have got sued, it was Mick Jagger's idea. Every good idea in the history of rock and roll is Keith Richards' idea. But yet at the same time, he just made me want to play the guitar. Like, he makes it sound like it's so much fun. And he's right. It is. It's hard, but it's fun.
Yeah. And I think this book is just so good. And it's one of the great, rock autobiographies.
Absolutely.
And just so, of course, like, richly written and like just full of just incredible anecdotes. And so I revisited all the Some Girls sections. That's what my current tabs are. So, the reason I think this record is my favorite is because of when it hit me, right? So right out of probably like in college, I guess, was my first wave of Stones introduction, right? So I'm just like in college and right out of college, where I dove deep into all of the sort of British rock bands and all the 60s and 70s, you know, the big ones, the Zeppelins, the Who, the Stones. And I spent a lot of time listening to those records. And then, you know, you run out of records. I mean, I know this. We just mentioned the Stones are still making albums, but you kind of run out of the classic records. And I just sort of, you know, I'd put them on every once in a while, but I wasn't deep into them. And then this book comes out, and I read it, and I'm obsessed with it, and I'm rereading passages, and I'm like, you know, living in this book. And it came out in 2010. I just double checked. I thought it was about that time. And I revisited it, and shortly thereafter, a very serious relationship that I had been in ended. There's a theme to my life. And so when that happened, this record just, like, I remember reading the passage about Some Girls and being like, that sounds like my kind of record. Like, I remember listening to it 10 years prior over and over again, but that I hadn't revisited it in a while. And so during that period of time when my relationship was ending and I was reading this book and like pretty obsessed with it, is when I revisited Some Girls. And there's just, when you know how that is, we've talked about it before, but when a record hits you at a particular time when you're open to it and ready for it, and this record was just there for me at that moment. And then as I was re-listening to it, I realized, like, and we'll get into this in more detail, but the songs that I like the most on here are the Stones doing their sort of honky tonk thing. And I know that, like, Mick was listening to a lot of like disco and things, but that's not what I hear. What I hear is a lot of like their imitation of honky tonk music, which does not match up to the honky tonk music I grew up on. And I just kind of love it. It feels like this, I don't know. It feels like this, like, great appreciation for the music that I grew up on in terms of like the honky tonk kind of music that I loved. And the songs that I gravitate toward on this record have that vibe to them. And I think as I was thinking, marrying those two things together, that's what makes this my favorite.
Yeah. Okay. I couldn't figure out what record number this was. Anybody figure this out? Because I think they've got so many like UK reissue compilation albums that it's really hard to figure out what particular number it is. But it's a lot. Came out in June of 78. Recorded in Paris. This is the first incarnation of having Ronnie Wood as a full-time member of the band. And Ronnie adds a different dynamic to the band. Yeah. He had been on a couple different songs on the previous two album studio albums, Black and Blue and It's Only Rock and Roll. I mean, so we talk all the time about this, you know, the late 60s output. Those albums, again, going back to what we were saying, there's five or six legendary songs on each of those albums. And I know a lot of people are like, Black and Blue sucks. Well, I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah, well, it's more to me. The more thing is, you went from these records that got, I mean, Beggar's Banquet, Let It Bleed, Sticky Fingers, Exile on Main Street, and then there's no way to go but down. And so Goat's Head Soup, which I think is underrated, I think it's underappreciated, but it is not as good as, there's no way it's as good as Exile on Main Street. But then it's followed by It's Only Rock and Roll, which isn't even as good as Goat's Head Soup, and then Black and Blue. So they now are, whether it's the Rolling Stones, I mean, you have to put this in some sort of, you know, context. It's the Rolling Stones. So these three records have gotten progressively worse, which that doesn't, if it was any other band, you'd get kicked off by the label. But I mean, these are still Black and Blue. I'm besides Fool to Cry.
So
I'm
do not you, sure that there's much on so it. Do you consider this like a comeback record?
This is a huge comeback, I think. Okay. I mean, I think from where they were and even the whole, like the opening track being a disco song, and I know Mick Jagger's had said, so, you know, some people don't like some Rolling Stone fans. I think this is the best disco song I've ever heard in my life. But you know what? I'll say Donna Summer's Last Dance. I put Miss You right behind that.
Okay. Mm. Yeah. Critically, this was a success for them. This was the only time that they've ever been nominated for Album of the Year at the Grammys.
That's wild.
The only time. Now, this is Album of the Year. They've been nominated for Rock Album of the Year and won, you know, several times. But for the overarching Album of the Year, this was the only time that they've ever been nominated.
That doesn't compute.
And they didn't win. Let's see if you guys can figure out who won from these candidates. Ready?
Yes.
This just pains me. Grease, the original soundtrack. Saturday Night Fever soundtrack.
John Travolta's walking away with a Grammy.
Barry Manilow's Even Now. And then last but not least, Running on Empty from Jackson Browne.
Run on Empty one.
I wish.
Wayne?
Wayne? It's got to be Saturday Night Fever.
It was Saturday Night Fever.
I figured they'd split the votes. Grease and Saturday Night Fever split the votes.
You'd think, right?
The Running on Empty, Keith, during the sessions, he was driving to and from. I'm just going to pull the book out every once in a while here.
Yeah, go for it.
He was listening. He talks about how he was listening to Running on Empty the whole time they were recording Some Girls.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I can get a little Jackson Browne vibe on some of these songs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure. This is in the Rolling Stone 500 Greatest Albums. It is now currently number 468. It was as high as number 270 in the 2012 list. So a little overcorrection there, I think. I threw this out earlier today, Jason, and you chimed in because I was talking about how I was listening to Vampire Weekend's whatever it's called, Modern something or another. Yeah. Anyways, it was the album that came out in what was it, 2013?
2013.
And I said 2013 is the worst year of releases if Vampire Weekend's record is Pitchfork's number one record and Rolling Stone's record. So now I'm like fixated on wanting to see what else was out there in 1978 that they were competing against. So here are, I'm looking at albumoftheyear.org. So here are the highest rated albums of 1978, according to that website. Duke Ellington's Pure Gold gets a solid 100. Sam Rivers' Waves, I don't know that one. Warren Zevon's Excitable Boy, which I love. Wayne, do you know X-Ray Specs?
Yeah.
So Germ-Free Adolescence came out in November of 78.
Are you skirting past all these other? Whose list is this? Because I'm looking at,
this is albumoftheyear.org, and I don't know. I don't know.
52nd Street from Billy Joel. Are We Not Men? We Are Devo. Yeah. The Cars debut. Road to Ruin.
Van Halen.
Parallel Lines.
Yep.
Outlandish Day of More.
Big Star's Third. Willie Nelson, Stardust.
Darkness on the Edge of Town.
Blondie's Parallel Lines.
Stranger in Town, Bob Seger.
Jerry Rafferty's City to City.
Give Him Enough Rope by The Clash.
Yeah.
Lots of good stuff. Heaven Tonight, my favorite Cheap Trick record.
Yeah. Oh, The Police's Outlandish Day of More.
I said that.
Did you say that? Okay.
I did.
Sorry, I was shouting over you.
shouting me down.
Did you say Ramones' Road to Ruin?
I did.
Generation X's self-titled. Dire Straits self-titled. Okay, so, all right, so we're laying the groundwork that 78 was pretty good. Pretty good for music outside of the Saturday Night Live. Saturday Night Fever soundtrack. It's late. I'm going to say a lot of stupid things because it's late. All right. Let's go track by track. As a reminder, scoring is based off a number of songs on the record. Wayne, how many on this one?
10.
Do you hear the glee in his voice?
Perfect
okay. Means top song's going to get 10 points. Next favorite, 9. On down to the least favorite for 1. Miss You. Single. This was released as a single in May of that year, just prior to the album coming out in June. Wayne, you already mentioned the disco element. Disco song? This is a disco song?
I mean, you could categorize it as one. You wouldn't be terribly wrong, but okay. I mean, using the elements. And that was one of the things Keith Richards would always put off on Mick is, he's in the clubs, he's listening to all this new stuff. Yeah, it's all
fault.
Totally blamed the whole thing where they gave Katie Lang that song credit for. He absolutely says he blames. Yeah, that's my favorite part about Keith Richards. He blames everything bad on Mick Jagger and takes credit for everything good. It's so awesome, but the one thing that I noticed from this record, kind of like examining it more on a lyrical level, is like there's this other side of Mick Jagger that you see on four or five songs on this record. And this one too, I mean, you know, Hanging on the Phone, Sleeping All Alone. There's this, you know, this longing for this other person while his friends are all bringing around girls and booze and drugs. He's pining basically for somebody very specific. And I thought that vulnerability, and there's almost like a lack of confidence in it, which is so, it's tucked behind the best oohs and ahs in rock and roll.
Yeah, I mean, that's so well said, Wayne. I don't know that I can add much to it other than just like, as you were just reciting the lyrics, I started to shake. You know, I started to like, I can hear, I mean, just, you can't sit still with this song. It makes me want to dance. I was doing it last night. I was making dinner, just having a crazy person dance party by myself in my kitchen with my dogs, listening to this record and this particular song. And I think, you know, because when I even hear the word disco, it shuts me down sometimes, you know, and yet this particular tune is one I could listen to over and over and over again. I mean, if this record wasn't so stacked, I mean, I would have rated it higher. It's just the record's so stacked. Like, yeah. It's just such a good album.
So this was the last number one song on the pop charts for the Stones. Peaked at number one. Finished number 16 for the year. I'm looking at the Billboard Top 100 of 1978. You guys realize that the Gibbs account for 5 of the top 10 songs of that year.
Wow.
And when I say Gibbs,
were the Shadows Dancing?
Shadow Dancing from Andy Gibb was the number one song of 1978.
Wow.
Followed by Night Fever.
All those good records that we listed life. Earlier from 1978 and Andy Gibb's Shadow Dancing is
they're,
the number one
they're,
song.
They're,
like, that's
they're
why
not
you,
accounted
that's how you
in
lose
the top
your
10.
Faith in humanity. That's how it happens right there.
Look, you give me crap that I own Shadow Dancing. That song is infectious. I love it. The rest of the album.
Yeah, syphilis is infectious too. That doesn't make it a good thing.
You're such an ass. All right, let's get scores. Jason,
This is a 7 for me.
Okay, Wayne,
8.
Okay, this is my 9. And I just realized, Jason, I'm so sorry. I didn't change who the guest was going to be.
It's okay, Ben. I know who I am.
Okay. All right.
I don't need you to tell me who
I am. I know me.
Okay. You're like, I know I'm not Thad. All right. When the Whip Comes Down, that's next up. Did you guys read the excerpt from the Rolling Stone magazine interview with Jagger? He was talking about this.
No.
Okay. So regarding the song's lyrics, quote, there's one song that's a straight gay song, When the Whip Comes Down, but I have no idea why I wrote it. It's strange. The Rolling Stones have always attracted a lot of men. I don't know why I wrote it. Maybe I came out of the closet, in parentheses, laughs. It's about an imaginary person who comes from L.A. to New York City and becomes a garbage collector. I sure hope the radio stations will play it. And they didn't. They didn't play this song.
This song does not do anything for me.
Okay.
Relative to the rest of the record, I should say. Like, there isn't.
I'm looking at my score. I'm like, man, did I embrace my.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't know that part about it. I probably would have thought it was. Yeah. Yeah, I would have thought. Probably would have thought it was cooler if I'd known that. The way Keith describes it is like, you know, and a lot of my opinions here are going to be based on Keith Richards. Right. It's going to be very favorable to Keith because I'm on his side. I'm on Keith's side.
So what does he say about this song? Because this feels like a Keith song.
Yeah, he said it basically, of course he said it was his idea, and he says it basically just like came together kind of in this sort of rush of creativity, because this whole record is basically written in the studio, you know? Like they came in just with a blank slate. Sorry, I have
Visitors.
Restless pups. So yeah, they it's just sort of this kind of conflagration is the best way I think I would put it. And it sounds like the whole thing's on fire, which just for me in the context of the record, there are a couple of songs on here, and this is one of them, that don't feel like they fit on this record the way that they should. And that's my issue with this song more than anything else, is that I understand that the record was, you know, written in studio, and it was kind of this, you know, lightning in a bottle magic that they caught. But at the same time, that this particular song, When the Whip Comes Down, to me stands out like a sore thumb. And you know how I feel about that, Ben. Like when there's a song on a record that stands out like a sore thumb, it just really bothers me. And this is one of a couple of songs that I feel that way about.
Okay. All right, Wayne.
Well, it's got such a huge chorus. I think that's what probably I never really dove into the lyrics, but I will say this, it does feel timing wise. And then some other things on the record lifted from 53rd and Third off of the Ramones debut. I mean, there's some like, they don't use the same story, but I do also think that I don't think that he becomes a garbage collector. I think that's definitely metaphorical about being, you know, about doing something trashy. No, I just think more like at the time in 1978, being gay was looked upon poorly by a majority of Americans. I just don't like it when Mick Jagger, like, especially when they do it kind of in hindsight, there's a lot of explaining things that I think it's a lot of revisionist history. But yeah, this feels very much like they're trying to be punk. Like they're trying to tap into something a little bit taboo. If it wasn't for the big giant chorus that you know, that's a great, you know, when the whip comes down, it could be anything.
It gave four points for the chorus.
What is the whip a metaphor for? It doesn't matter. It's that chorus is very strong, but inside it does feel like they've nicked a couple of things from the Ramones. And then they don't really stand behind the story very, very well.
Yeah, 100%. Wayne, Ramones was the first thing I thought of when I heard this song again. I thought, like, this is them ripping off the Ramones, and they do it well. I mean, again, I'm scoring it low, but like in the context of this record, that's my favorite Stones record. It's good. It's just not to me. It doesn't fit.
Okay. What's your score?
I gave it a 2.
Wayne.
5.
Okay. I'm 6. Their cover of Just My Imagination Running Away With Me is next up. And yeah, that's a Temptations song. So going back to what you were saying with this doesn't fit, I think that I gave more points for the last song because, like, when I listen to this album, I don't even think about sequencing because I feel like it's a big giant mess of sequencing. Like it is, it's literally. I think I wouldn't be surprised if they put this together on an album because it was in sequential order of when they recorded it. Because it's all over the place. Like, I don't love the sequencing. But then again, in the full context of this album, I feel like it's one of those beautiful, beautiful wrecks, you know? But I still don't quite understand the choice for this song, even though I really like their cover of it.
Yeah, it's a great cover.
And everybody
it's
not else as good is like, as, I don't
know. Yeah, it's not as good as The Temptations. And I had read that they wrote like 50 songs during this time, which most of those songs, I guess most might be an exaggeration, but a lot of those songs either made it on Emotional Rescue or Tattoo You. So
yeah,
they had, I don't know that a cover was necessary. I don't, it's not like it's a cover that blows you away and you're like, oh my God, I'm so glad the Stones did that. It just is it's very much a tribute to a great band and a great song.
Yeah, but when we talk about the greatest covers of all time, this is never in the conversation.
Right. This is it is a great cover, and that's it probably got more points than it would normally for me because that's a tough one to do and they did it well. But I kind of, and this is going to be an unpopular thing, I think, is that unless you really have like a Jimi Hendrix Watchtower kind of spin on things, like unless you're really, you know, Johnny Cash, Hurt, unless you're those huge, you've made the song your own kind of things, that kind of spin on a cover. If you're the Rolling Stones, I don't want you doing somebody else's song.
But that was that was the thing during the 70s. It's so weird. Okay, so again, Wayne's going to make fun of me when I say this. I've been listening to a lot of Neil Diamond records recently. And this is me getting ready to potentially see the Broadway show. He is a fantastic writer. He's a fantastic writer, yet
for preparing for the Neil Diamond Broadway.
Well,
show,
we may or may not go. I'm probably going. I'm probably.
Oh, you're going now.
Down. I'm going. I'm going with three other people, and I'm probably going to get shot down for that. Which, whatever, it's fine. As long as we go to Hadestown, I'm fine. But he does. He does some really awful covers. Like we know him as a really great songwriter, but yet he threw on his cover of Leonard Cohen's Suzanne. It's not great. He throws on a cover of Both Sides Now from Joni. Again, not great. And it's like, why are you doing this? And
because people awfully cover him, and he's just trying to
because that was the time period. That's like they were churning out so much music that I feel like they had to throw on some other garbage to appease the
feel
labels.
Like had to is strong language. If you wrote 50 songs and let's say half of those, let's say a quarter
so then why
of those
is
songs
this on
end
here?
Up on, there's no reason for it.
Okay.
Because right. they, yeah, it's be like an honorary thing. Like we love the Temptations. Everybody loves the Temptations. So it wasn't, it didn't
It's happen. Good. It's really good, but it does. Yeah. It doesn't need to be on there.
Okay. It's my four. Jason.
Five.
Wayne.
Four.
Title track, Some Girls.
Here we go.
Yeah.
I'm just throwing this over to Jason because I see your score, man. Okay, go ahead.
Oh man, I am so glad, and I'm not looking forward to getting canceled for liking this song so much. If cancel culture actually existed, I'm about to get it. I'm glad it doesn't. It's not a real thing. So, I mentioned. I think again, context is important as we understand this song. Again, this record was on like heavy rotation after a 2-year relationship ended in like not great fashion. By not great fashion, I mean I didn't do such a great job of ending that particular relationship 10 years ago, 12 years ago, whatever it was, 13 years ago now. Goodness, I'm getting old. So, and I think like, I was in a weird headspace and I was in my early 30s and I was a newly single man and I was listening to this record over and over and over again. And I just literally, the lyrics were just making a lot of sense to me right at the time. And I think I made an attachment to the song at that time. Yeah. And so I was interested to go back and listen to it because I thought, cause of course, I remember the lyrics, but I was like, I wonder how I'm going to react to it now, you know, 14 years later or whatever. It has been 14 years since that time, that period I'm talking about. How am I going to react to it in my 40s, 14 years later? And man, this song rips. Like, it comes out with that harmonica right off the bat. It makes me want to sing and dance. Yes, there's some problematic lyrics in there, but honestly, I was really diving in, and I was reading interviews with Mick and Keith, who can always justify anything that they're doing, of course, right? Mick can justify anything, and Keith can just point at Mick, as Wayne mentioned earlier. and I'm along for the ride. And so, like, some of the things they were saying about some of the lyrics, you know, when he starts naming like racial groups of women and sort of starts talking about their sexual habits and things like that. And his justification was like, it could have been any, you know, just fit the meter or whatever. And I'm buying it. I'm coming along with them. I'm buying it. I'm going along with this ride. And I think the thing about this song is that, again, like, without reducing it too much, it just slaps. This is just like, this song, it gets me moving and it captures me every time. And I think talk about sequencing. Whether it was how intentional they were with it or not, I think it's perfectly positioned on the record. I just can't say enough about the song. I think it would be it's way up there for me. Yeah. It's way up there.
So this was higher for me initially until sometimes you can do too much research. And this, so I read some quotes from Ahmet Artigan, who is the chairman of Atlantic Records, and Mick had told him that this song was a parody of the type of people who hold the attitudes that are reflected in the lyrics of the song.
That's BS.
Which is bullshit.
That's such bullshit.
So they even went so far as So Ahmet met with the Reverend Jesse Jackson, who was pissed about the way that blacks and women were degraded in some of the lyrics of this, which you've already mentioned, Jason.
Yeah.
So Atlantic Records puts out a statement. Here's the statement. It never occurred to us that our parody of certain stereotypical attitudes would be taken seriously by anyone who heard the entire lyric of the song in question. No insult was intended, and if any was taken, we sincerely apologize. Is that the most lame apology? Like, we hear those apologies all the time. Weak. Well, I'm sorry if you were offended. That's essentially the gist of this apology.
But what's funny is the part.
This is a parody.
The only thing I respect about this song is that they asked him to change it, and they said no.
And they said no, right?
Yeah, and that's the only thing I respect about this, because it's wildly misogynistic and racist. It's not. And I think, and as bad as that is, I mean, that has to be number one and number two on my list of things I don't like about it. But number three is the greatest rock star in the world complaining that he gets so much tail and it costs him half of what he owns or a necklace or whatever.
I love it.
Yeah, it's
love it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's absolutely
love that.
He's crying about being Mick Jagger. And I'm just like,
yes,
dude. Like I just like is it.
Wayne, it's so rock and roll. It's so rock and roll, right? He's complaining about being Mick Jagger. It's amazing. The song slaps.
I will say musically, I couldn't agree more with Jason. That harmonica starts. I mean, this is because as great as Honky Tonk Woman is, I think musically this has a if they had better lyrics, this could have maybe even been bigger than that. But he just goes into it's so it's so terrible. All these women are throwing themselves at me.
Man, the more you say, Wayne, the more I'm like, I should have punched it up even more. Yeah. You're selling me even more, buddy.
Yeah.
Aside from the racist part and the misogynistic part, but the other stuff, man, you're making my case for
me.
Some
girls give me children. I only made love to her once.
Oh, it's so good.
It's so rock and roll.
Grudge Baby. Somebody had it in for.
Could anybody get away with these lyrics today?
Oh, yeah.
I hope not.
No way.
I don't want anybody else to do this.
Talk about a different time.
But it's just a parody. It's just a parody. All right, this is my two.
The Lonely Island guys.
Yeah. Wayne.
This is my one. And like I say, that doesn't make it a bad song musically, but I just felt like they took a chance, and I don't buy that it was a joke. Do not buy for a second that it was a joke, and they just missed the mark with me.
All right, Jason.
9 slaps.
Okay. Lies. Lies is next.
That slaps.
I always talk about the least listened to songs. According to Spotify, 3.7 million listens for this song. So it's least favorite.
I heard they never
compare
they
that with
play
Beast
it after,
of Burden that has 403 million.
I read that after the tour for this record, they never
this
played
was
it again.
Yeah, they never played it again.
And I wouldn't say that they're, I mean, it rocks. It definitely seems, it does work. In kind of a,
I think they're talking about lies in it because they only say it like,
but it, it really, I, if times. You connect it to the previous song, it's like, I guess he had more to say. Oh, you're a liar too.
All right. I don't even have any notes at all for this song. It's my 3.
Yeah, it's my 3 too. The only thing that I would add is it just kind of reminds me of When the Whip Comes Down, and then we're going to talk about another song later that it reminds me of as songs that don't fit for me.
Okay.
For the same kinds of reasons.
Yeah, Wayne?
3 also.
Okay.
Yeah.
Time to flip the record over, and it's Far Away Ice time. I threw this out on the socials saying that we were preparing to listen to this. I said, you know, what are some of your favorites? Man, people were divided on this song.
Hmm. That troubles me. I don't know how you could be divided on this song.
Well, okay. So on Twitter, it's fucking amazing. Scott Kummer and Chris Hadwin said it was their favorite, but there were a bunch of people that said, I don't love this song. His hokey honky tonk.
I know, but that's on purpose.
And it's like, right. Mm-hmm. Like, go back to what we were talking about with some girls. Yeah. This is the parody.
This is the parody song. It out of the park. Like,
crushes.
Yes.
I love satire, and I know that I love this one more because it's religious based, but the Church of the Sacred Bleeding Heart of Jesus. Oh my God, I love it. Oh, I love
so
it.
Good.
It. Like I say, he keeps, I get that he heard, you know, this Bakersfield style of country on a radio. I mean, I can, and he paints that picture, but the rest of it is absolutely a shot. He's definitely taking a shot at organized religion. But again, though, that girl seems to be specific, just like in Miss You. It's like Mick Jagger has got somebody on his mind, and he actually said in an interview that there is a girl, and I tried to find out who it was, but I couldn't nail it down. But
he kept it pretty close to the fence, this
is the biggest rock star in the world obsessed with this girl that I can just see sitting in a corner booth of some divey truck stop in Barstow looking past him out the window. It sounds sarcastic, and that makes it work even better.
I agree. Yeah.
I know that girl, you know, like, and lyrically it absolutely nails it. Like you said, the organized religion part of it, the themes in it. I love when, and this, they do this sometimes, that kind of parody thing. And I just love it how they sort of give the wink and the nod to, it's not like, I think they get a lot of flack for ripping off, you know, rhythm and blues and all these other things. And I'm like, yeah, of course. But like, I feel they know what they're doing. It's not like they were trying to pass it off as anything other than what they were doing. And I love it. And I love when that wink that they have in so many of their songs, and it comes out here beautifully. But it's also just a really great song. I mean, it's just that the pictures that he paints are just so vivid. And I know that girl, you know, and like when I hear this song, I can picture her in my head in various places around the country. And I just absolutely love this song, connect with it so much. It's my number 8.
Yep. It's my 8 as well. And Wayne.
6, but there's just so much good stuff on this record.
Yep. Okay. Respectable. What's next up? This was released as a single in the UK, peaked at number 23 there. I didn't see it's any
an interesting choice.
Yeah, I didn't see any chart position in the US, so it may have only been released in the UK. Which back in the day that was also a thing. I guess they didn't think that this was going to chart in the US, which when I listen to this, do you hear a single?
I don't. No.
I mean,
no, not from 1978.
Well, I mean, I guess Hang Fire was considered a single too, and that was a terrible choice as well, but whatever.
Yeah, this one for me, it fits with Lies and When the Whip Comes Down. That little package there doesn't really make sense to me in the context of the record. I got no real problem with the song. I think every song on this record is good, but that little kind of that package of three there, that sort of trident, doesn't seem to make as much sense on this record as it should, especially in the context of all those other outstanding songs.
Okay. It's my one for sure.
Yeah, it's my one too.
But there were two people on Twitter, Ben Young and Dave Paulus, said that this was their favorite song on the record.
It's nonsense. It's complete nonsense. This record has Miss You, Shattered, Ridiculous. Beast of Burden. It's Yeah, I would. I would. Can you yeah. not make? Can you make them not your fit Twitter followers?
Some girls.
Is there a way to do it?
Yeah, some girls, I feel like. Now that it's, we all know it's a parody.
There's always a couple songs that are going to sound like complete Chuck Berry knockoffs, and that's it's okay. I don't. It's fine. Yeah, I can. Yeah. I don't have strong feelings.
We know where
the other. I do think lyrically there is a little bit that I think they could have. I'm not sure if I'm torn between could they have given it more attention musically or is this the absolute best way to go? But this whole idea that these guys are now high society. I mean, they've made money and they're out traveling in these circles with old money. And yet they're, you know, one of them's got a heroin problem and the other one has done heroin if he doesn't have a problem, but they've now gone from these English boys obsessed with rhythm and blues who are the bad Beatles. And now at some point Mick Jagger is going to be knighted by the fucking Queen. I mean, I'm torn whether I think that this could have used more something special and made it more unique, or do I like that they took their complete, you know, their roots of where they just basically just either did Chuck Berry songs or tried to write songs that sounded like Chuck Berry songs. I'm not sure which I love more. But on this record, it kind of falls into it would be better than, it's better than most anything anybody else has ever written. But on this record, it's my two.
But on this record, it's only respectable.
I don't know if two is respectable, but.
Yeah, it's my one. Jason.
Yeah, it's my one.
Okay. Before They Make Me Run, next up. And the only note that I've got in here is, of course, Wayne has the highest score off a Keith Richards sung song. Of course, Wayne has the highest. Go ahead, Wayne.
So they only give him one song.
Your spirit animal is calling.
They only give him one song, and he. But I think the lyrics are the best part. I mean, the best part of this. It clearly shows who wrote fucking Jumpin' Jack Flash, fucking Sympathy for the Devil, because there is nothing like that in here. This is unapologetic, unrepentant. I am Keith Richards, and I'm going to walk out of here just short of them making me run, because he actually went to trial for it. But
yeah, during this time period. Yeah,
but this is my second favorite Keith song too. Happy is still by far my favorite, but I think he is who he is. And I think this is one, another, when he focuses and just gets that one song, you know, you can really see who he is. And he may not be the most phenomenal lyricist, but it's all heart. Keith Richards is all heart.
Did you guys see what the original song title was supposed to be for this?
Maybe at some time, but I'm
Rotten Roll.
Hopefully Mick Jagger came in and said, let's change it. I heard this was recorded on a day that he wasn't there.
That he wasn't there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Hilarious.
I love this song. Keith Richards forever and ever. And he tells a story in the book about, I was rereading last night, that during these sessions, they were going, I think it was this particular song that he just kept wanting to do it over and over again. And like, everybody was getting tired. And so everybody leaves, and Keith, in typical Keith fashion, just like passes out under the desk. And the local police band came in to do a session in the same studio while Keith is asleep under the desk, and they don't notice him there. And he's got his needles and everything in a bag right next to his head. And he just sort of like at some point gets up and like politely excuses himself because he's trying to, because he had to pee, and he's like trying to figure out, he's like, do I just wait this out or do I actually get up? And so he finally just sort of like politely excuses himself. And his comment about it was like, even the police want to make sure that they get the right take in the studio. You know, it's like they wouldn't even stop to bust Keith Richards, you know, who's like very obviously high and making all kinds of decisions that the police might be interested in thwarting. But man, I love this song. If this record wasn't so stacked, it would be higher on my list. I love Keith. He has that. I love his weird ass voice. I love, like, absolutely. You know, I just, it's so uniquely him, and he's not a great singer, but it works. And he's such a great writer. And I just absolutely adore this song. So it's my six, but it'd be higher if this record wasn't my favorite.
There were two people on Twitter, Dan Weiss and Randall Cox, that both said this was their favorite song on the record.
Yeah, not going to argue too hard on that. No. It's great.
Yeah. All right, Wayne, your score?
Oh, 7.
And this is my 5. All right. Beast of Burden, next up. Cue up the confetti or whatever you want to do. This is the first time we've had a unanimous top song in, God, I don't even remember. When was the last time that we had a unanimous?
I can't even recall.
It's been forever. Second single off the album, peaked at number 8, which is crazy to me because this song has stood the test of time and will continue to stand the test of time.
It is the rare ubiquitous song, especially from that time period, that I never get tired of.
Yeah.
You've heard that song a million times. Everyone knows that song. Yeah. It's on at every bar, every restaurant, yeah. every cab, every Uber these days, wherever you hear that song, everywhere. Every guy with a guitar at playing brunch is playing this song. And maybe I get sick of it when he plays it, but I never get tired of this song. It's undeniable. As soon as I looked at the track list and started listening to it, I was like, I'm not even going to bother worrying about that's, nope. That's my number. Yeah. That's it. That's my bet. That's 10, period. We'll figure out the rest of the order later.
I did the same thing. This song is so fucking sexy. It's like So the two guitar parts from Keith and Ronnie Wood just are so intertwined. It's just that this thing is just, it's hard to talk about. And then how much bravado, I mean, there's so much self-doubt and inadequacy in the lyrics, but yet it's still Mick Jagger. And he sang it just like Mick Jagger would say it. And it's so there's like this contrast there too. It's just unbelievable.
Yeah.
And I want to believe it's the same girl from the other two songs.
I mean, it might be.
But I do love that Keith Richards tried to turn this around onto himself and said that this was because he was the whole thing with him getting arrested and not being available, that Mick had to carry the load. It was so classic Keith Richards. This is clearly not about that, but he doesn't even care. He'll turn it into that anyway. Mick's the Beast of Burden.
Is there a way to give it extra points because I've misheard the "I Can Suck It Up" lyric forever? Even to this day when I hear it, I swear he's saying that he's sucking a duck. But I mean, this is top song, so I guess I don't need to give extra points.
Yeah,
is
just undeniable.
Yeah, I don't know if this is my favorite Rolling Stones song. Period, though, it might be. It's so I may have a three-way tie. Honky Tonk Women is definitely in the conversation, and I would say Under My Thumb is in the conversation as well.
I think Beast of Burden might be, I mean, recency bias, because I've listened to it so many times and we're talking about it right now. But if I had to say right this minute, I'm going to go with Beast of Burden.
Okay. Wayne, do you have one?
It's not Beast of Burden, but I'm going through all the other songs in it.
And I know, I'm looking.
I don't think I could nail it down on such short
notes. Some Girls is obviously 1A.
Yeah. Tell you what's not in my top 10.
I love that he's doubling down.
Love is Strong.
Or tripling down at this point.
Well, I almost put it 10 when I saw it, because Wayne's scores were already up when I started scoring. So when I saw he scored it so low, I almost was like, you know what? It's not really my 10, but I'm going to put it at 10. Let's have some fun with this.
All right. Last but not least, Shattered. Shattered. Last single off the record. This is surprising to me. Only peaked at number 31. Because I feel like I've heard this song on classic rock stations forever. And usually if you're peaking at number 31, you are not standing the test of time with the song. But it's because of the Shadoobies, isn't it? That's why
it's
the test of time.
So whereas Beast of Burden never gets old, I think what you just said about Shattered is kind of why it probably didn't get as high of a score for me. Because I don't think it holds up the way that Beast of Burden does. And I have heard it 10 billion times, you know?
Wayne, you have the high score out of all of us. And my only other note was, you do realize that Mick sings on this one, right?
Okay. Yes. So I reading like various things, they kept saying something was their most punk song or whatever. And I think this is their most punk rock song on this, but I don't think it's
not
British punk.
Shadoobie.
No, but not punk. It's not the British punk. Like, this is like CBGB's punk. This is like Blondie and Television and Talking Heads punk.
So Tom Verlaine used Shadoobie in his lyrics?
Not everything is a direct correlation.
I'll shut up now.
But this, to me, with all the, you know, with the love and work and joy and sex, and this is that the most punk song, I think,
that part, sure.
And like I say, even the Big Apple can even get Mick Jagger.
Any other last comments?
I just think it fits. It's not quite in my little, trident of When the Whip Comes Down, Lies, and Respectable. I think I like it better than those songs, and I think it fits a little bit differently. It just ends up kind of in the middle of the pack for me. Again, I think that that there may be a little bit of bias coming from me, just because I've again heard it so many times. Don't think it holds up.
Do you feel like this is a good album closer? Because I do. Would you have wanted to close with Beast of Burden?
No.
Okay.
If I was sequencing this, Beast of Burden would have led off side B.
Hmm. Okay. All right. What would be your closer?
I would end with Far Away Eyes.
Bold choice. Okay.
Yep.
Okay. What's your score?
4 for me.
Yeah, this is the only.
It's just a victim. It's a victim of the record more than anything.
Yeah,
though.
This is the one time that I really disagree with you. Even though we are wide expanse on some girls, but that's the one time that I disagree with you. It's my 7, Wayne.
9.
Okay, And we had a bunch of people who said Shattered was their favorite song on Twitter. Some people who just go by nicknames. Turbo. Florida Free Thinker. Harold Bloomfield and Tony K. They also said that this was their favorite. Okay. I always ask, did we cover everything? Did we miss anything? And
the one thing that
considering that we did this on one day's notice, I think we missed some stuff, but whatever. It's all good.
I pat us on the back, first of all, for doing this on one day's notice, and thank you guys for including me again. This is a lot of fun.
Hey, you volunteered. We were going to do this just the two of us. It's been a while since we've done just the two of us, and you're like, that's my favorite album. I'm like, you volunteering? And you're like, yeah, let's do it.
Yeah. I'm very rarely going to not volunteer when I have the chance to come on the show with you guys, but the one thing that Keith talked about in the book, got to mention at least one more time. He keeps talking. He repeatedly in the section about Some Girls talks about how the record felt like the words he uses are a rejuvenation. And then he also goes on to say that there was a sense of renewal. And he credits a lot of that to several different things. One of them being Ronnie Wood.
Yeah.
And that, that being his first album. And then also just like the way that it was recorded and written, and just the fact that like they're in the French countryside. It's so fucking romantic. They're in the French countryside at the studio. And like, of course he blames Mick, who he claims wanted a fancier studio. And he was like, Keith thought this studio was magical because it was so simple and it was so straightforward and it had the sound that he wanted. And, you know, and then he points a finger at Mick, and it's just,
and Mick tried something to screw it all up.
Yeah, there's just something romantic about the whole thing, at least through Keith's eyes. And again, the record in the context of my own life and listening to it, when I think about rejuvenation, it's just like the record seems to keep coming back into my life at times of renewal and rejuvenation. So that's the only thing I'd wanted to add, is that, you know, I really appreciated reading that last night, him saying that, because I think that's part of what I gravitate toward about the record, is it does feel that way.
Well, was it because... So when I listen to this album, it's fun for me. This is a fun record to listen to. And and part of it, we've already talked about influences of, you know, the country elements and the punk elements and the disco elements and the R&B elements. I think part of the appeal of this record is, unlike the previous several records, they weren't trying to be the Rolling Stones. Like they were, I think, like in Black and Blue, they were trying so hard to be the Rolling Stones and put out a Rolling Stones record. This one just seems like, we're just going to throw in all of these different influences that we're hearing and just make some fun songs. And it works. And I could be completely wrong, but that's what, with Keith even saying this is a rejuvenation for them. I think they found their fun again.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense for sure.
Wayne, last comments before we look at our top five.
Yeah, this, like you said, this is just a fun record. I don't think anything in here is, lyrically groundbreaking. There's no social commentary. They just, like you said, got back to, more being the Rolling Stones and not trying to be the Rolling Stones. Just be the Rolling Stones.
Yeah. All right. Here's a tough five. You guys already know what number one is. Beast of Burden, unanimous tens across the board. Second is Miss You, average score of 8. Third, Far Away Eyes, average score of 7.33. Fourth, Shattered. Despite Jason's score on that. And then fifth is Before They Make Me Run. So Keith gets a song in the top five. Apologies, Jason. Some Girls did not make our top five.
Hey, listen, there's no accounting for taste. That's why we do this, right?
That is true.
That's why we do this.
That's true.
It's all subjective.
Yeah, this was fun, man. Thanks for coming back
on. This was fun.
Always, yeah, always a blast hanging out with you.
Yeah, likewise.
What do you got coming up on Marinade?
Man, I got a lot of cool stuff. I just recorded with Jonathan Payton, has a record.
I don't know Jonathan Payton.
Okay, so Souther Vaden from Jason Isbell and the 400 Unit produced his record. Very the good. Kingmaker.
Okay.
The Kingmaker, Souther Vaden, produced his new record. It's called Nothing Here is the Same.
Okay.
Highly recommend going and doing that. Maybe not tonight as it is way past everyone's bedtime, but like I would say put that on tomorrow morning as your morning listen. A stunning record. Jonathan's a sweetheart, great writer, and is getting the critical and fan love that he deserves.
Okay.
I've been fortunate to listen to this record for a while. And it just came out last week, but I can't say enough about it. And so I just recorded with him yesterday. We had a wonderful conversation. He was in a cult when he was a young man. It went all kinds of directions. The conversation did, as you might imagine. Yeah. So I'm really excited for folks to hear that. And then I've got a lot of cool stuff. I re-recorded with Sammy K, who has a couple of really cool projects. Have y'all had Sammy on?
You've told me that I need to reach out, and I need to.
Sammy's tailor-made for this show, man. He's a music nerd. He knows everything. He's funny.
So I followed him on Twitter. He followed me back, and at some point, I don't know if I initiated or I said you should come on, or maybe you initiated, but you were late to show up for the recording. So Wayne and I spent 45 minutes of him talking me down about scheduling guests. So we don't even want to go there because I'm like,
ruin all my hard work.
Yeah.
Just be the Rolling Stones.
Yeah.
Well, Sammy will show up and he'll be awesome. Okay. And like he's a wild man. He's and of the best kind. We're recording. I don't want to give too much away because I want people to listen. Okay. But we were recording, and he's sitting outside. He lives in Cincinnati, Kentucky, right there across the river. And he's sitting outside, and we're talking. Have this really in depth conversation. He hates Bob Dylan, by the way, so that might be fun. But he's gotten into Dylan's gospel records. And so he's going on this tangent about these gospel records. He's really analyzing them in this conversation. All of a sudden, he stops and he's like, that motherfucker. And he's pointing at something, and there's a raccoon in a tree. And it's a whole saga with him and this raccoon. It's been going on all day. It was just magical. It was so much fun. Okay. And I can't wait for folks to hear it because it's hilarious. He's such a great dude. He's a sweetheart. He's a great writer. So I have that coming up, and then I got to plug quickly just my Joe Pug episode that I recorded at Tuffy's Music Box back in the end of January.
Did that come out yet?
Yeah, it's out.
I'm sorry, I haven't listened to it yet.
All good, but it's a great one. It, you know, I've recorded with Pug twice now. He's one of my songwriting heroes and creative heroes, and
Joe Pug, the guy who won't answer my emails?
he's planning on coming back to Florida, so maybe next time he's in Florida I can introduce you and you can put a face to it. But we sat down in the green room. It was really cool. It was kind of a thrill for me, you know. I've been listening to his music for so long, so that's what I've got going on right now, and just some really cool stuff. And I got a couple of other things on the books that we're going to record soon. I went through a period there where I was just, my brain was so scrambled, I was like, I can't do any of this. Yeah. But now I'm feeling really, really good. So I'm like, come on, give me more guests. Let me go on your show. Let's do things.
I'm where you were like 2 months ago.
Mm.
Where I'm kind of over it. But
But it's sometimes, we've talked about this before. Sometimes you need break, that rejuvenation, you know?
I'm taking May off.
Like some girls.
I'm taking May off.
Good.
Yeah. Am I seeing you at Caleb Cottle in a couple weeks?
It's a school night, isn't it?
Yeah, I feel like it is. It's like a Wednesday, something like that.
I like to go. I love Caleb and I love Van, of course. Yeah.
I get it.
I can't commit because it's just, I've been going hard, man. I've been like doing all this single life, man. It's like, it's a different beast of burden.
I get it. All right. Let's do this. I Wayne, I'm not even doing the ending part tonight. I just don't care.
All right.
You guys ready? Yep. I'm just going to do that. Here we go. We are Records Revisited, and we are
out.